Okay, we will begin. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Geography 12. My name's Keith Clark. I'm a professor in the Geography Department, and this quarter I'm teaching this class, Geography 12 and Geography 176A. I think I'll see a few of you in that other class. That means it's going to be a busy quarter for me. So let me start by introducing some of the other players here. We have six sections in this class. That's three TAs to handle the labs, one of which has already met. So let me introduce my TAs, these highly trained experts in geographic methods and cartography. We'll start with Dan Irvin. Dan, you want to say a couple of words? Just say hi.
Nice to see you or see you again if I've taken
a medicine. Look forward to working. E.G. Hu, freshly arrived. And continuing with our international theme, Olaf Mensah. Okay, let me begin with some routine stuff. I'm going to be mostly arriving very early for this class to get wired up. And the reason for that is that Geography 12 has been selected as one of 22 classes in the entire UC system to go into an online format. So this means that over the course of this quarter, some of these lectures are going to be video recorded, and various other things are going to happen as well. You'll probably notice yourself being photographed in labs occasionally. Don't watch the camera guy. Just keep your eyes to the front. That's the bottom line. I'm going to be trying out some of the new material that I've been preparing for over a year for the online class, so you get the benefits of all of that. You also get the benefits of the fact that I've been writing a textbook for this class now for almost a year, and I'm very close to done with that, and I'll be able to try out some of the new material from that as well. So let's go over some logistics first. Let's interrupt on that. Let's go to this. This is the class website. I kind of maintain dual websites for the class. So I do use GaucherSpace, and you'll find when you got onto GaucherSpace, who's using GaucherSpace for the very first time? Okay, don't worry. You'll get to love and hate it within a few weeks. GaucherSpace is actually Moodle. It's an online curriculum design software program. For this class, we're going to use it exclusively for the labs. But it does have some nice tools for discussion forums and for answering questions and sending emails to people in the class and so on. So if you log in for the first time, you'll start receiving mails and announcements and these sorts of things. It's a good place to look on a regular basis because it keeps you up to date. And you'll also find all of the labs and the lab material and pretty much everything you need for doing the class on the GaucherSpace site. Now, it'll be no secret this quarter that I don't like GaucherSpace very much. Rub that piece off the tape later. I keep my own website for the class, and this is the one I'll be developing and expanding into the online course. So if you go to it, you'll find most of the material you'll need on it, like my phone number, my office hours, my email, and so on. Let me show you where some of the extra material for the class is. If we go under this tab, we'll take you to the Geography Department. This tab will take you directly to GaucherSpace. This one is called Extras. What I've done is, I've been teaching this class for over 20 years now. And every time I get something that I find students don't digest first time, I make up a little sort of mini tutorial on it. And mostly they're PowerPoint presentations, but I put them under Extras there. And it also includes things that I often show before class. So I often use the 10 minutes running up to class for some additional material. So that's an incentive for getting here on time. Here you'll see the labs. Right now, all it does is refers you to some details and the STAR lab. The labs for this class can take place in 2610 Ellison Hall. It's a computer lab with a very large number of computers in it. There should be enough for everybody to get their own. And the labs are pretty much all online. They don't use very sophisticated software. They use things like Google Earth and Google Maps and some other pieces of software. The first one uses a piece of software called Flex Projector that I think you're going to enjoy and have some fun with. The idea of the labs is that everything you need for them is on the GaucherSpace site, or it's right here. And then lastly, This is the lectures part of the website. So generally speaking, I plan out what I'm going to do every single day, well in advance. The topic is over here, and that corresponds to chapters in the textbook, which are annotated over here. Sometimes it's only parts of a chapter. And then you'll find a PDF column. PDF is the is a PDF conversion of my PowerPoint slides that I use in class. So if you want to, one thing that people like to do is to print that out in advance and come with it to take their notes onto. It's a reasonable way of doing it. And over here is audio in MP4 format of all of my lectures. That's the recorder sitting in this pocket right now. It's recording what I'm saying. After each lecture, I'll take what I said and put it on there. Okay. So there's quite a lot of material available. If you miss a class, that's a way of catching up. I don't recommend missing too many classes. When we get down to exam time, and yes, it'll be in only 5 weeks' time, here is a practice test. It's a multiple choice online test, and it reveals the answers to you. Okay, so you can use that to study for the test. You won't get any of those questions on the actual midterm. And if you scroll down, there's the same thing for the final here. Okay, November 23rd is a Wednesday. It's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and it is my common experience that when I offer class the day before Thanksgiving, it's usually me and about two other people who are going to have to work through Thanksgiving. So there won't be any class on the on that particular class meeting. Okay. Otherwise, it's pretty much straight through up until the final exam, which is on December the 7th. And we miss 2 days for Thanksgiving, Thursday, Friday, but we make them up with the Thursday and Friday of this week, so that it all comes out as a 10-week quarter in the end. Okay, so that's the website. Any questions? Anything I can answer yet? Yeah?
These files are already there, like from last year?
The files that are there right now are the ones from last time I taught the class, which was fall of last year. I'll be replacing them after each class, usually within a few minutes after each class. So they'll be updated. But if you went to the PDF now, it wouldn't reflect the two or three new slides that I've just put into the presentation. Okay, the other issue is access to the labs. The labs, or the lab, Allison 2610, the Star Lab is going to get pretty heavily used this quarter. There are 75 odd students in 176A. They're using that lab as well and have a lot of assignments. You'll be using it weekly. And Geography 3 and I think at least one other class are in that room. It almost certainly means that you'll have to do some work outside of class time to finish your labs. And usually the only time that's going to be available is weekends and evenings. And that means getting access to the room outside of hours. And this is why we have these security forms that are being passed out in week one, that's starting next week, in lab. If you can just sign those, bring them back, we'll sign them, return them to you. You take it to Building 300, they'll give you an ID card that serves as the key to enter the room. There's a little light by the entranceway. If it's red, the door is locked. If you wave your card, it's like getting into a hotel room. You wave your card at it and it will click and open the door. Don't prop the door open. One of the noisiest things you can imagine is the siren that goes off if you leave the door propped open. Okay, second pause for questions. All crystal clear so far? Wonderful. I've got to get a decent web browser installed on here. All right, not being one to waste any time, I want to give an introductory lecture today, just to kind of give you a flavor of the class. I'll start by criticizing the textbook, not one but twice. The first time is that this book was originally written in, I believe it's 1991. It's 20 years ago. Okay. This edition was, I believe it was 2000 or 2001. So it's kind of showing its age. On the other hand, the bookstore is selling it for $107. Okay. And I can tell you, as a textbook author, that doesn't go to the author. It's pretty much all markup. So here's criticism number one. On the other hand, it's still full of golden stuff. What I'm going to be going over a lot of material in lecture. You're going to get a lot of extra material. But this is where you should go to study for the tests. and to reinforce what I say in class. I'm often going to gloss over things that are covered in a lot more depth here, so you're definitely going to need the book. Okay, so let's get started with the class, Maps and Spatial Reasoning. This class has had several different titles. This is the current one. The spatial reasoning part reflects a campus-wide initiative in geography of a couple of years back. We have a spatial center within the department, and the idea has been to move the idea of spatial thinking and spatial reasoning out across the campus. We offer a minor in spatial thinking, which you can sign up for if you like. It's kind of an interesting minor. This class is the required class for that minor. So you're already somewhat done with it. Yeah. All right, so I want to set the stage today by, throwing up a controversy, let's say. So I'm going to challenge the status quo. So it's often said that in the beginning was the word, right? And if you go to many other departments in, say, social sciences or humanities, they'll tell you that everything begins with language and the written word. So I want to challenge that assertion right off the bat. There's the entry from Wikipedia, the ultimate authority. It's generally agreed that true writing of language was invented independently in Mesopotamia, 3200 BC, and in Mesoamerica, invented independently because it wasn't linked in any way, about 600 BC. No two historians or experts in anthropology would use exactly that number. They all have their own numbers. It's generally believed that numbers, or writing numbers for counting things, is older than writing. And we know that drawing is very much older than writing as well. But I'm going to say maybe what came first was the map. Okay, so this is one of the earliest pieces of identified examples of writing. It's a set of symbols. It's been very clearly dated to 4500 BC. Homo sapiens was a little bit different back 7,000 years ago. The spatial thinking part, where does that come in? Well, it's going to permeate this whole class. It permeates the labs and everything we're going to do. And what I'm hoping to do is to give you sufficient experience and understanding in what spatial thinking is that you're going to be able to apply it to everything that you do as a college student and beyond. So here's the question. Did writing develop before spatial reasoning? Because spatial reasoning and maps go hand in hand, actually, and graphics go hand in hand. So what is spatial thinking? Well, it's reasoning and thinking using graphics. And we often think of images in our heads. We talk about holding a mental map in our minds of memorizing where places go and so on. Yeah, we can also use in reasoning the spoken word. I'm using it right now. I'd be kind of boring standing here not saying anything. I can use the written word. So you have a textbook for the class and you have text on the website. I can use numbers and symbols. We're going to certainly meet a lot of those in the course of this class as we look at a little bit of the trigonometry and algebra of mathematics behind cartography. So that it's not the only way of reasoning, but it's a powerful one, I would argue. Primitive paintings and drawings on cave walls have been reliably carbon dated back to about 35,000 BC. And they become quite sophisticated, of obviously recognizable features, people, and so on. So the tools that we use for visual reasoning, just like your laptop or your pencil or a pad of paper, in visual reasoning we use drawings, we use photographs and images, charts, which are often statistical charts, graphs, and importantly maps. So it's about pictures and reasoning with the visual part of your mind. So you might say, if this is the case, how come we got examples of writing and no really good examples of very early maps? Okay, well, I would argue it's because most maps are not kept. Maps are consumable to a great extent. You use it and then throw it away once it's served its purpose. A lot of maps, I would argue, for thousands of years were drawn on the sand or drawn in the dirt. Just to make the function that they were immediately meant to satisfy. So that obviously they don't survive. A lot were drawn on materials that are not suitable for surviving. An enormous number of early Chinese maps were drawn on tissue and rice paper that's so thin that it really didn't survive very well. This map on the right-hand side was drawn on the bark of a tree, and then rolled up for a very long time. It's kind of a miracle it survived from the early colonial period in the Americas. So let's see what the authorities say about the first maps and how old they are. And let me start with the second criticism of the textbook. We flip it open. We go to chapter 1, page 1, which I carefully marked. And it says, figure 1.1, clay tablet map, circa 2200 BC. Okay, conveniently located after the discovery of writing, you see. This is the oldest known map. I won't read any more. You can read the rest when you get to it. So I would argue that we need evidence of older maps in this to make my argument true. Okay, so let's go to one place where there is solid evidence. And that's this place. And I just found out I'm going to go there next spring. I'm really thrilled about that. Ketilhoyak, which is a Neolithic village in Turkey, here in southern Turkey, continuously occupied since about 7500 BC. Really been there for a while. And when it was excavated in the 1960s by archaeologists, they discovered this picture, the one at the top. And it was published after the fact and dated, and it was said that this was the world's first map. Okay, because it shows, it was believed to show the town itself in the front, and sure enough, those little black squares do look a little bit like the buildings in Ketilhoyak. And then it has this red blobby thing in the background, which was interpreted to be the two twin peaks of a volcano, which is still relatively close to the site. It's called Hasandagi. And it's believed that it looks about the right shape that it was all this time ago. So I could say, well, this dates us as 6,000 BC, approximately. It's 8,000 years ago, so now conveniently we go back before the invention of writing. But aren't academics interesting people? This is a paper published in 2006 by Stephanie Meese, who's an archaeologist at the University of Cambridge in the UK. Now, she went back to the original, there's the location of where this mural was found. She went back to the original photographs that were taken of the site. And in this paper, A Bird's Eye View of a Leopard's Spots, she makes a very convincing argument that not only was the map not a map, it was actually a picture of a guy wearing a leopard skin, but the original archaeologist had perhaps deliberately fabricated the account of it being a map so that he could get credit for discovering the site. So unfortunately, I've given you some good evidence and then I've thrown it out. But if you go back even further, or actually more recently, because this is a much more recent discovery, we go 2009, the Journal of Human Evolution, we see the work of this team of Spanish archaeologists have been working for 10 years analyzing these pebbles. Okay, a bunch of pebbles found in a cave in a place called Navarre in northern Spain. And the discovery is really quite extraordinary. The whole article is a wonderful read. But onto these stones, and the pebble-sized stones, have been etched these patterns, and what they've done is interpreted those patterns and made a very convincing case that what they are is a map of the area outside of the cave. So these are the polished sandstone. They were fairly easy to scratch. So this takes us even older. This now takes maps back to 14,000 years before the present. Okay, 14,000 years before the present, the last few haplotypes of the human genome were still evolving and splitting off and out-migrating from around the world. So really a remarkable set of discoveries. If you don't believe it, this is from the article itself. On the right-hand side are the interpreted etchings from these rocks, okay, or the pebbles. And on the left-hand side is the matched part of the view from the cave itself. So you can see that this knob of rock that sticks up is quite nicely drawn and seems to have a river and some actually animals in front of it. This is obviously a good place to go and hunt. If we go down the bottom, you can see the floodplain of the river itself, which actually still floods at in the spring. And this symbol here is clearly meant to mean water, and this clearly means a river. It kind of looks like a child drew it. This is 14,000 years ago. So here's my assertion, just something, so you got something to talk about at dinner tonight. So I would argue that humans could make and interpret maps and reason spatially thousands of years before they developed the ability to write and reason in other ways. Okay? The logical extension of this is that it is human nature to reason spatially. We've got it programmed in. We don't have to worry about it. We're born with it. Okay? But we still need to fine-tune it somewhat. What was its use? Well, its principal use, at least based on the evidence I've just presented, was for hunting, for knowing where animals were or where foods were that you could go and eat. But it must have had a safety function too. The map, the 14,000-year-old map, also shows points where you can climb ridges or move to from one location to another, so it shows locations. You might think about safety. And here's the intriguing one, migration. For some reason, between about 40,000 years ago and a little bit more recently, Homo sapiens migrated from its founding area in Africa out to populate the entire world. And I would also assert that it would have been impossible to go from Africa to Australia, or Africa to the Pacific Islands, or Africa to Europe even, if we didn't have fairly advanced spatial thinking capabilities and maps. Okay? So how's that? All your other forms of scientific reasoning and thinking, I can predate. Now, when psychologists test and analyze human brain, it turns out that a significant proportion, I tried to look up the exact proportion this morning but couldn't find it, of the human brain deals with vision, just with using the eyes and assembling the information that the eyes are bringing in, which is highly complex information. There's a blind spot in the center. We have differential focus. We have the differential view plane to deal with our eyes. And we have two eyes, so we've got stereo vision. And all of this information and processing, it is an enormous amount of the capacity of the human brain. So I would argue it's probably the biggest untapped potential as far as human thought is concerned. We can certainly tap it for memory. It's recently been found that by using spatial reasoning, you can memorize enormous quantities of facts. There was a story within the last year of a New York Times reporter who went to cover the World Memory Championships. Yes, there is such a thing as the World Memory Championships. And was so intrigued by interviewing people as how they did their memorization that he decided to put what he learned into practice, and the following year won one of the competitions held within the World Memory Contest, which was to memorize the sequence of 52 cards, a unique sequence of 52 cards, in just a few minutes. How do you do it? Well, you do it with spatial thinking and spatial reasoning. And that's why we're here. We're going to learn all about it. So in the beginning, I would argue, was the map. But not maps are far more complex than just simple maps the way you may think about them. We're going to deal with them in all sorts of ways in this class. We're going to deal with them as relatively simple paper documents, printed on paper, the type we might find bound into an atlas, or we might buy and use when hiking. We're going to use online maps and digital maps in many different formats, in the GeoPDF format in many of the labs, but in other formats. We're going to use virtual maps in terms of data being collected from GPS receivers, satellite images, and so on. We're going to use all of these different map forms. But we're also going to look at what is becoming called InfoViz methods, information visualization. How do we take things that are not inherently spatial, like words, and make them spatial so that we can use the spatial reasoning part of our brain to analyze them? Okay, just to give you a sense of what that means, I've finished chapter one from the new book, which is about what I've just been talking about, and I took the text, once I've finished writing it, and put it into the Wordle site. If you haven't seen Wordle, I recommend it very highly. This is a frequency analysis of the words that occur in that chapter, the first chapter of my new book. and you'll see map and maps come out as very prominent. So does Catalhoyuk, and figure and maps and sight and humans and so on, all the words I've been using today. So this is just simply taking the words I've been saying and visualizing them, making them into a map, because that's as much a map as many of the other examples that you might think of as cartography. Okay, so what are we going to learn in the class? The following. We're going to learn a bit about spatial reasoning and thinking, and I'm going to return to this theme time and time again as we work through our assignments and through the material. We're going to look at map geometry, how maps are made and constructed, how they're put together, and what they contain. Maps' power comes from the fact that they're symbols. They represent symbolizations of a representation. We'll learn more about exactly what that is. We're also going to learn practical map use. If you're the kind of person that gets lost frequently, you will definitely get lost less after this class. I can promise you that. Okay? Hopefully you'll decide that maps are not designed to be simply shut in the glove compartment of your car and left there until they rot and get thrown away. So for doing that, we're going to learn map use, which primarily is going to mean taking measurements from maps and using those measurements. We're going to do map reading, which means interpreting the features that are on maps and using them to derive information about the landscape or about features on the landscape. And we're going to learn quite a bit about navigation, really in two ways. From the point of view of positioning, that means finding out where you are on the Earth's surface, and through navigation around in the environment. So we're going to learn also about how to measure the length of your pace, how to use a compass, how to use a GPS receiver, some of the more practical aspects of navigating on land and sea, and we'll do a little bit of coverage of air navigation for aircraft. We're going to look at map representation, so what can we take from the landscape and put it onto maps, and this makes an enormous difference. We're going to start with some information about scaling and the scale transformation, and very quickly realize that if we put everything in the whole world on our map, we can't read the map, it's just too detailed. So we have to leave things selectively off, we have to choose what to represent. We're going to spend quite a bit of time looking at the complications of that. Later on we're going to do cartometry. There will be some formulas and so on to deal with, but they're not too complex. I guarantee you've already met them in high school. They're that simple. And we're going to do some map analysis. How do we tell whether a distribution on a map is clustered or evenly distributed or things are far apart? There are simple measurements that we can make from maps that allow us to see that. And then the latter part of the class, before we wrap it up with the final exam, is kind of a sampler of the disciplines that are related to the field of cartography. So I'm going to look at geographic information systems, at computer mapping and its history, online mapping. We're going to do an extended look at Google Earth, a class I called Having Fun with Google Earth. We're going to look at photogrammetry and air photo measurements and so on, and we'll look at remote sensing. Okay, so this is what you can expect from the class. It's a lot to cram in 10 weeks, but we can do it. How are you going to learn it? Well, use all of the resources available to you. These are what they are. The textbook, which I've made some comments about already. We're going to have lectures, and I pointed out that there's a good deal of support material for what happens in the lectures that's going to be on the website. You're going to meet with the TAs in labs every week and do the labs. The labs are very informative, and they've been designed to be kind of fun as well. So you'll be working your way through those. We have Gaucho Space and its support tools. We can have discussion forums on every one of the labs if we want, by discussion section, however you want to organize it. There are a lot of supplemental materials. Some of these I'm going to show before class. Some of them are YouTube videos. I've got some additional photographs and information that I'm going to be showing you as well. We're going to do the exercises in the lab. They're not all in the lab. Some of them are out on the campus, so some of them involve walking around on the campus and using GPS receivers and so on. And then we're going to do evaluations. Okay? And evaluations are really of two types. They're when you get evaluated to see how well you've done in the class. But I'm also going to be evaluating what you think about the class. There's the standard ESCE evaluations at the end of the quarter, which you know and love, no doubt. But I'm going to give you some additional evaluations starting next Monday because of this online class element that I've been talking about. So we'll do it before and after test for our own evaluation. Okay, this is what I expect from you over the course of the quarter. even though I present all that material, all my PowerPoint slides and audio of all the lectures, I would like you to attend lecture. You know, there's nothing like being there. As Woody Allen said, 80% of life is showing up. Attend the lab. It's extremely important that you do attend the lab. In fact, you'll be able to do the lab probably, in most instances, without even setting foot in the lab. Don't do that, okay? You will miss the wisdom of your collective group, and you'll miss the wisdom of your TA. Okay, so I strongly recommend that you do attend lab. Submit the labs in a timely fashion. You'll be penalized when they're late, and that's deliberate because they're progressive. The idea is that by the time you get to the later labs, you're using stuff you learned in the earlier labs. So it's not going to work if you turn them in late or all together or in the wrong order. So they're designed to be a progressive learning experience. Okay, so read the book and the materials. It's amazing how much more interesting lectures are when you read the chapter in advance. So I strongly recommend that. Do please ask questions. If you want to stop me and ask a question during lecture, I love that, okay? No problems with that, so don't feel bad about interrupting lecture. And exercise that part of your brain that is spatial and that does spatial reasoning. I think you'll see that it opens up lots of opportunities in this class and beyond. Okay, I think that's all I prepared. So, any questions? Yeah. No? Okay, so see you for lecture one on Monday, and labs will meet. So go to your lab section.
$29, where can I be found?
Sorry, let me just turn this off first.